everybody. Welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths. And today's Real Talk is with a real leader who I am legitimately in awe of. She is evolving herself. Every time I turn around, we were talking before this recording and then she has something new. And I was like, oh my gosh, here she goes again. And she is absolutely amazing. She is truly the epitome of women helping other women, which is just awesome to see. She's got a podcast that we'll talk about a little bit later, but without me going on and on, I'll just introduce everybody to Emily Jensen. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you, Shauna. My gosh, what an amazing intro. I like want to record that and wake up to it every morning to feel inspired. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for including me on this awesome podcast.
Yeah, thank you. I'm so excited. So just because Emily and I've known each other for a while, folks, give you a little bit of context. We have a mutual friend, Jennifer Matthews, who is vice president of brand strategy at FanDuel, who introduced us. And it was one of those things like sparks when Emily and I first met. There was just this really hit it off. And we continued to talk and share contacts and stories and support. As I mentioned, she has a podcast, Leadership is Female, and was kind enough to have me on. And so we've been planning this for a while. So I'm really, really glad to have Emily on. So Emily is not only founder and host of her own podcast. She's also a speaker, gave her first TED Talk, which is amazing. And we'll talk about that because the story of it is really good. And she's also a very accomplished sports business executive, does amazing things in brand partnerships and marketing, and was most recently GM of the Reno Aces baseball club. So it's quite a journey that you've been on, Emily, and I would love for you to share with people a bit about your career evolution and kind of how you got to where you're at today.
Yeah, sure. So I think like a lot of people who work in sports, I was an athlete growing up, so played just about everything and had two brothers that kept me competitive at home when I wasn't on the team with my friends. And I wanted to figure out a way to make that my career, but coming from an itty bitty town in Illinois, I literally had no idea and no exposure to how that would happen. All I could see was the games on TV, WGN Cubs games during the week or football on the weekends. And what I saw was the coaching staff and I saw the trainers, the people who ran out on the field when somebody got an injury and helped them. And I thought that would be such a cool job. So when I went to school at University of Illinois, that was my intention until a few weeks into my biology and chemistry classes. And I realized that I had already peaked after a few weeks. My brain, like that was all we'd covered in high school. And I wasn't really open to progressing anymore. I dropped those classes and I was like, what do I do now? Well, I ended up in an intro to advertising class and loved it because I'd been, I'm not an artist professional artist, but I love drawing and writing and I'm just a creative person by nature. And so advertising started to open my eyes to like, okay, like business and creativity, like put together is pretty dang cool. So I was able to get into the advertising program in Illinois. And then at the end of my time there was faced with a choice, full-time job at an ad agency in Chicago with benefits and a salary, or take an internship with the Chicago Bulls for an hourly rate and the promise of, if I worked hard enough, $100 bonus at the end of the week, if I was number one in sales or number one in calls. And I took the internship.
Of course.
Yes, of course. I mean, who wouldn't, right? Might've had something to do with the Michael Jordan statue out front being a fan forever.
Yeah.
But really it was about my dream was to try this thing out. I wanted to figure out a sports career. So, I did that internship. I really enjoyed it. And, I was curious about the community piece and the way that the Bulls connected with the community. Wasn't a role open with the Bulls, but there was a role open with a big nonprofit in Chicago to do partnerships and fundraising, which partnerships would help me develop that skill set, and fundraising would keep me and my sales skills sharpened. So took that role. And I remember leaving the Bulls, and I was told, like, if you leave sports, you're never getting back in. And I know a lot of us have probably heard that along our journeys, but I knew that wouldn't be my story. If I wanted to get back in, I would figure out a way to do it and market myself. So, you know, down the road years later, I moved to Reno, Nevada, and find out that there's this AAA baseball team here. And the only role open is an account executive in corporate partnerships. And by this time, I had about 8 years experience in sales and marketing. And this is like, you know, a two-year experience type role. The pay wasn't what I was expecting. I'd had titles as high as director, and I was going to, you know, be this AE. And so I got the offer, and I decided this was like another one of those choices with the advertising agency or the Bulls, like, bet on yourself. And I thought, you know, this, they don't know me from anybody else. I've got to come in here and prove myself. And so I set a goal that I would earn the role that I wanted, which I wanted a VP title. I would prove myself and I would earn it. 2 years later, I became vice president of corporate partnerships at the Aces.
And I haven't heard this full story before. So if you're listening and you're in awe, I told you, first of all, I told you, and I am in awe, and this story is amazing, Emily.
Oh, you're very sweet. It was like such a journey, and it's about goal setting, and you know inside what you are capable of. And sometimes you have to take a step back, or like a perceived step back, to launch yourself forward. And that was that opportunity presenting itself again. And my career has been filled with these types of choices and circumstances where it's like, all right, well, if I stayed with one company, like maybe I would take the stairs and I would just keep climbing one at a time. But when you go for new opportunities, sometimes you get to take a big jump into a new title, a new role, but other times you want the company or the opportunity more than the title or the pay that it presents itself. And you have to, you know, maybe go down a couple of rungs and so you can climb again. And that's where the betting on yourself comes in. So it paid off. It paid off with the Aces. And then we were faced with another like crossroads. My husband was leaving the military and got a corporate offer in Houston. And we reinvented ourselves before. We're like, let's do it. Let's go. So we moved to Houston, and I didn't have a job. I had literally been there once. The decision to move came pretty quickly, where I didn't have a lot of time to start to build up a network before we moved, because I was really focused on my goals with the Aces. We were leaving right before opening day, and I was running the department, and I wanted our team to reach our goal, and I wanted to reach my personal goal. So I was really focused on the here and now and making sure I left on the best terms versus focusing on the new opportunity, which definitely paid off in the end. But I will say, when I landed in Houston, I was thinking like, whoa, I should have prepared more for this. Because now I don't have a job, and I don't know what to do. But what I did was kind of go back to the things that I'd always done to find success, start networking. And I was fortunate that the CEO of the company that my husband was working for was willing to help us. And he took us out to this incredible sushi dinner in Houston. I will never forget sitting around this table with Norm Chambers, this was like a multi-billion dollar company. And this guy was so generous to take us out and give us his time. Looking back, I think like, how did that even happen? But sitting around this table, having sushi, he's asking me about my career, like what I want to do next. And I started telling him about the things I had done and where I'd come from. And he's like, I'll make some introductions for you. Literally within 2 weeks, he made 5 introductions for me to people he knew in Houston. And one of those women introduced me to, I met with her. It was a great conversation. She introduced me to the CEO of the Harris County Houston Sports Authority, Janice Burke, who some of your listeners might know. She's an incredible woman, total dynamo, just an absolute professional. We had, she agreed to have lunch with me, and over chicken parm offered me a contract job at her, at the Sports Authority to work on projects as the sales director. And I took it. And, you know, that landed a bunch of different opportunities in Houston over the 2 years. And while I was working in that role, it was new experiences in the sports industry. So I couldn't help but call the aces, call the president of the team and say, hey, this cool thing we did. You know, I was thinking about this partner we had in Reno, like maybe you could try this, or how are things going? Anyway, we kept in touch. So 2 years later, the GM role was open. I didn't even know. And they'd gone through an interview process and weren't successful in like finding the right candidate. And he said he had this like epiphany one day that was, I know who I need to hire. I just need to convince her to move back to Reno. And that was me. So that was in 2018. And we did it again. We packed up our stuff. This time we had two kids and we moved back to Reno. And I had that role for almost 4 years running the Aces as the general manager, along with the leadership team there. And really my expertise was in their marketing, marketing development, partnership development, and creating a front office where we weren't siloed in our departments, but the marketing department served all partnerships was tied together. It was an incredible experience, but all good things, you know, you come to this point where it's time to do something different and to move on. And for me, I'd had my third child who, she was about 6 months at the time. I'd returned from maternity leave. You know, things were going well, but looking down the barrel of another season and what I wanted for my family, I knew I had to find the next iteration of my career so that I could be the mom I wanted to be for them, which was someone who was home a lot more often than the job allowed. So that is probably like not the short version. Maybe, I don't know.
No, it was absolutely wonderful, because as you were talking, I was thinking, especially for those who are listening, for me, it hit so many things where there was relevancy. And I was like, oh, I've had that feeling. I've had a similar experience, or like, I'm sure people who are listening could be just relate to it. And I think, so I'm thank you for sharing all that you did. And, you know, I think there's some of the things that really pop out to me in as you told that is like the amount of courage that you had to, and you had to have had a bit of a North Star about this concept that I talk about a lot, which is like evolving. You know, you gave yourself the grace to have an experience and then gave yourself the opportunity to like pick your head up and look for something else, and making these moves and staying in touch with the right people. And the way you talked about your networking was so important. And even when you told the story about how you kept in touch with the person at the Aces, and these are all things that I think are so important for us all to hear, you know, because I think there's times, especially in these last few years, when we're all like, oh gosh, what do I do next? And who's going to help me? And what do I do? And how do I help myself? So I think this is so much of what I'm trying to do with this platform is bring people forward who are so real and willing to share that story so that we can hear and learn and be inspired or see that example from someone else. So it was really fantastic. And I love how you were like, I came from this little town and didn't know anybody and had no contacts in sports to like, I became the GM of a baseball team. Like, no small feat.
Yeah. I mean, looking back, I know we'll talk about the TEDx piece, but that's how the talk starts, where I'm talking about where I'm from and reflecting back on this small town in Illinois and the opportunities and the growth and the moves we've had, anyone can do it. You know, I'm just the middle child of two boys from, you know, two incredible parents that loved sports and grew up on 6.5 acres with literally no neighbors. And I think that is part of why I love working in sports and entertainment, is because my dad will be mad if he hears me say this. I was bored as a kid. Like I craved more.
Yeah.
Right. I wanted to be part of the excitement and the energy. I wanted so badly to be that kid who like ran home when the streetlights came on, but like, we didn't even have streetlights. I didn't even have neighbors. So now to be at a stadium with like the lights on at night, like that is, that's like my 8-year-old self just high-fiving
me.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so awesome. And it's funny, as you were telling the story, I was thinking like, you know, I came from Ann Arbor, Michigan, and I didn't know anybody in the industry. And I made decisions along the way that other people wouldn't have made. Like I said no to a full-time job with a certain company that has a swoosh on it. Like, who the hell does that? Because I didn't want to be like in a sales type role, and I didn't have something else, but it was because I was obsessed with wanting to work in the NBA. Like, you know, sometimes you make these decisions and you're like, almost don't want to tell other people because they're like, what the hell did you just do? But looking back, you're like, you can see how a bit of the dots connected on your own journey. And there is a bit of like betting on yourself to earn it, figure it out. It's not always the easiest road.
No, but if you're not going to bet on yourself, like who is, you know, there's a lot of fish in the sea, right? And there's other people who are advocating stronger and harder for themselves and their ideas if you aren't doing that for yourself. So you got to step into that power and speak up.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. But wait, as you're saying this, like, do you have moments of feeling that like, call it imposter syndrome?
Oh, totally. Everyone does. I think that's the most natural feeling in the world, because you can at any point say like, who am I to do this? And I think you can also say, who am I not to do this? Like, what is the harm in trying? What is the best that can happen? And I love that saying, and I've been using it all the time lately, because I'm at this point in my life where I'm like making a lot of decisions and I'm zigging and I'm zagging, and like one day I'm excited about something and the next it's something else, but it's like, what's the best that can happen? There's not, the worst case scenario is literally like nothing. Like, one, either you don't try, so nothing's ever going to happen, or nothing happens with what you tried to do. Like, there's no like penalty, you know, you're not going to jail. You're not sitting in the penalty box. You're not issued a fine because you tried and it didn't work.
Yeah.
Like, try. And time is, it passes like quickly. But it also, you can look back and be like, wow, look at all that I did in a week. So start today.
Oh yeah. I love that. It's so true. It's so true. And sometimes like when I went through the experience of having been laid off in the worst time and, you know, COVID, sometimes I actually look back at that and I'll think to myself, what's the worst case scenario now is like having no job. Well, I will fight to find a way. And that, so I think you're right. The reality is we all experience that to some degree. And I think the way that I get myself through it is thinking of these moments where I was able to get through a challenge, or I have these little sayings that I say to myself. So I love that you shared some of those here today, because everybody who's listening is going to have it at some point or does have it. And so I love that's also just the ability to be honest about it, because like, you know, it doesn't matter who you are. I think it happens to you. So.
Yeah, totally. Embrace it and then use it. Like, the who am I not to do this?
Yeah,
is the best way to rephrase the who am I, which comes from the imposter syndrome. You're like, wait, like, how did I get here? You know, who am I to do this? Who are you not to?
Yeah.
Like, you were picked. You're picked to do that role. Either you picked yourself or you were hired by the company. Like, do it. Own it.
Yeah. So good. So, which is actually leading me to ask you to talk about your podcast, Leadership is Female, because you weren't doing that before. It was one of those things that you decided that you wanted to do and you just did it. So talk to us about like what sparked that, and you know, how did you get your start with it?
Yeah. So I think like a lot of things, it was born in the pandemic. I had had a really cool opportunity to do some speaking and I loved it. I had so much fun having the microphone and telling my story and hoping to inspire women to do things that they thought they might not be capable of. And I told my story a lot and I had a lot of speaking things lined up in 2020 that were exciting. And then the world shut down and those opportunities dried up. And sure, there were different, you know, things over Zoom and things like that. But it also became this period of time where I was like, there are so many women out there that are doing amazing things. And as far as I know, not enough people are hearing about it.
Yeah.
So is there something that I can do to help share that voice, hand over the microphone? And that's where the podcast idea came from, is I didn't want to tell my story anymore. I wanted to help elevate these women and help lead her forward. And Marian Wright Edelman said, you can't be what you can't see. Mm. And I saw that firsthand when women came up to me at baseball winter meetings and said, oh, I didn't know I could be a GM until I saw you do it. And I wasn't the first. I was the first in like a long time, but the ceiling had already been broken, but there weren't enough women that were leading in that role to create the visibility necessary to have more women be offered those roles or earn those spots or have that as their goal. And when I looked at like the landscape of sports, that's 80% male at management level and above, still meant there were 20% women up there that should be sharing their voice and having that North Star for the next generation to like set that as their goal. Like, no, you don't want to be a manager. You want to be president. Like don't sell yourself short. You are capable.
Yeah.
So I signed up for an online course over the summer and it covered all these different things with like personal marketing and podcasting. And the podcasting piece like really stuck with me. It was one of those things where I was like, no, I don't want to do that. But it kept like popping up in my brain. I'm like, I'm resisting because it's what I should be doing. And I'm just getting a little bit of cold feet about doing it. So I kind of formulated the idea and I vividly remember sitting on the carpet of my closet floor, staring at my computer and the recording of the intro to the podcast. I'd come up with a name at like midnight on a Sunday night, like Leadership is Female. And I like wrote, you know, copywriting comes to us like in the shower, but hopefully like when we have a pen nearby. Yeah. So I'm like writing, I'm like, this is the name, this is the intro, you know, and I recorded it 50 different times and I picked the best one. And I'm like looking at the publish button on the Anchor platform, which is a platform where you can distribute your podcast to all these different networks. And I like my finger was like hovering over publish. And I remembered this saying, 20 seconds of courage. Oh. What could you achieve if you had 20 seconds of courage? You only had to be brave for 20 seconds. I'm like, oh, I can be brave for 20 seconds. And I hit publish and it was done, right? The podcast was live. Like I kept breathing. The world kept turning.
Yeah.
It was all okay. But there was no take back. Like I wasn't going to take it back after the 20 seconds was over. I'm like, I did it. So it can be done. I'm going to leave it there. And I shared it, you know, with this group of people and they gave me good feedback and was encouraging. So I just set a really, lofty goal, which I realized later, of publishing an episode a week. And, you know, we're 90 in since August of 2020. So it's been great.
Wow. I love that part about like a couple of things that you said were really stuck out about that 20 seconds of courage is so great. But it is this element where you realize you were holding yourself back. And I think that because I've had those moments like with our podcast and with just whatever I'm doing where I'm like, oh, I have to do that introspection to be like, wait, what, where is this discomfort coming from? Or why is that not moving forward? And then I just have to basically look at myself in the mirror and go, oh yeah, right. I'm getting in my own way, you know? And so I love that I'm going to use that one for myself, the 20 seconds of courage. Cause really that, I mean, that clearly makes all the difference, you know?
Yeah, it does. And I wouldn't have ever done it. Like, I bet you there's thousands of people who have episodes recorded on their computer that haven't published because they're too worried about what other people are going to think, or does it need any more edits? And at some point it's like, at least you did it, right? We've heard the man in the arena speech. We have that framed in my house, because it's just, if you're getting in the arena, you're there, you're doing it, you're trying it. Everybody else who's judging you is standing on the sidelines and they're too afraid to even try. Yeah. So have that support for yourself that like, yes, like I did it. Like I at least tried. And who cares what they say? Like, they're not even allowed to comment if they haven't done it themselves.
Yeah, totally. I think the other thing too, is like, once you do that, there is that element of, we were saying earlier about evolving things. You can put it out. And the beauty of it is that you can keep just evolving it. We were talking before we started recording some of the things that we've done to evolve the way that we've been marketing the podcast. And so, you know, to your point, it's like, the thing that you can do to get yourself out of the blocks, to get going, is so important.
Yeah. And the first one is not going to be good. And that's fine.
No. I look back at my first one and I'm like, oh God, I'm embarrassed.
But you did it. And at the time it was good enough. And it doesn't mean the content isn't worthy. You know, the guest was probably amazing. And like, I, as the host, was not good because it was my first try, but we did it. And then you give your chance to have a starting line and then evolve and get better from that point.
Yeah, totally. Well, you shared with us about the bravery that you have taken in so many ways as you talk to us on this, your episode here today. And the next one I'd love for you to share about is the bravery that you displayed and that you've taken with your efforts with the TED Talk that you just gave this past weekend. And I mean, again, congratulations on that. I had no idea that it was as involved as you had shared with me. So I'd love for you to share that with the audience.
Yeah. Thank you. They don't just let anybody on the stage.
Who knew?
Yeah. So, okay. I'll take you guys through like the whole process. So first you have to apply. You can apply. It doesn't just have to be in your city. This one did happen to be in Reno. It was TEDx Reno. They have them all over the country. X means independently owned, but they have a license from TED. And the way that TED finds their speakers and extends the invitation to speak on the TED stage is a lot through these TEDx talks. You know, they may pick somebody that hasn't done one, but they look through the TEDx speakers and, you know, you might get selected that way. But so I apply, there's like 300 people who applied to do a talk here, and they picked 12 local speakers and another 8 from different areas of the country that flew in to give their talk. And so you essentially present like this idea. They don't want it to be a speech. They don't want it to just be, you know, about you. It's got to be an idea. You present the idea, and then if they like it, they select it. But mine came with a caveat. So my talk was on confidence and the 6 behaviors that you can start today to become a more confident person, ones that I have used, and then ones that have been derived from all of these interviews I've done on the podcast, because the women I've interviewed said that confidence was the number one skill they improved in order to earn the next level in their career, which comes with a whole bunch of things. Confidence is standing up for yourself, speaking your ideas, going in on the big projects. Like it's a cascade. So this was the idea I presented, and the organizer calls me and he's like, all right, good news. You were selected, but you have to defend your topic first, because there's been so many talks on confidence in the TED community. And I said to him, you ever visited the creamer aisle in the grocery store, like the creamer section? And he was like, what? Like, where is this going? And I was like, Brett, is there only one type of creamer? He's like, no. And I'm like, you can get almond milk, you can get oat milk, you can get whole milk, like, and then the flavors, like there's so many choices. I go, this topic is the same. depending on who's delivering it, when, and what they're saying and how it resonates with the audience, makes it relevant, makes it something that people can consume, enjoy, and use. And he's like, ah, I see what you did there. Yeah. So
I see your confidence there.
Yeah. So anyway, they let me in, they let me in the room. So I wrote my first iteration of the talk. You go through three presentations to the committee. The first one, there was, I think, like 25 people in the room. And after you finish the talk, they go around the room and each person individually gives you feedback on what they liked and what they didn't.
Oh, wow.
And you do this three different times and you take the feedback and you evolve your talk to try to make it good. And the thing that I enjoyed about it the most was this feedback piece, because they knew, they in the room collectively, thousands of talks they had listened to. And like, who am I to say, oh no, I got it. Like, I don't need your opinion. This was an area of where like they were in the arena. They have been a part of this. Their opinions and the knowledge they had to share was so valid that I felt like honored that they could help me make this better. So, you know, I revised and was ready, you know, to go to stage. I'd practiced like all week. And we had a speaker dinner the night before where they told us, this is going to be the most difficult thing you've ever done. And it's super important. And you're going to be super nervous and good luck. I'm like, what kind of setup?
Well, you just made me more nervous. Thanks a hell of a lot.
Exactly. So we show up on Saturday. I'm second to last in the program, which literally we had to get there at 7:30 in the morning. And I spoke at 3:00. Wow. There were like breaks and food and like, it's this huge event. And I'm looking at the other speakers who are doctors. I mean, there's an oncologist, there's a pharmacist, there's a woman who works for Netflix. There's a guy who has just like, his career is bananas. When you look at his resume, a woman who's an author, and like, these people are amazing. And everyone was like really nervous about getting on stage. And so I was too. I spent most of the day practicing in the rooms in the back, just rehearsing, getting ready. And at one point during the day, I was thinking to myself, like, this is dumb. Like, I am so nervous trying to memorize these lines. I'm giving a speech on confidence. Like, come on, Emily. And so I decide to shift my mindset to have fun. I'm like, this is such an opportunity. I feel so happy to be here. Like, embrace it and have a great time. Yeah. And the moment I made that decision, Shauna, I started nailing like every rehearsal. So when it came my time and they did my bio and they were like, Emily Jansen, I like walked out on stage, like with the biggest smile on my face that I could do, and jumped into it. And I just, it was so fun.
Yeah. And you're giving me the chills as you're talking about it. I'm just imagining that smile when you had changed your mindset like that, you shifted your energy, your attitude, everything went. And it just like from the inside, you were truly happy and present from the inside out. And that is incredible.
I think the two lessons I learned were about feedback and about mindset, and about that mindset shift to moving from that fear and that nervousness. Like, how could my brain perform well? How could I do well when that was the energy I was giving myself? So shifting to excitement and fun and just feeling honored to have this opportunity, like, totally changed the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny, what there's something that I've talked about. I don't know where I got it from, but just it occurred to me at one point in my journey about such a difference between when you're moving from a place of fear or you're moving from a place of strength. Mm-hmm. And so there is that, nobody can give that to you other than yourself. And so I'm so glad that you brought that up, because again, for the listeners, doesn't matter if you're going into a pitch, you're going for an interview, you're whatever it is, or you're just I mean, how many times when I was coming up just to walk into my boss's office, I was like, oh, you know, but that moment of like, you know, asking yourself, am I moving from a place of fear? Am I moving from a place of strength and figuring out how you can get yourself there, you know, in order to be able to go smash it like you did. So that's congratulations. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. You are, as I started this out, just talking about, you know, you're evolving yourself every step of the way. And I love the way that you talk about it so openly and you share, and I think we need more of this, you know, really to help ourselves see what others are doing. And you said earlier about like representation matters, you know, and whether it's a person who represents diversity of any sort, or it's, you know, whatever the thing is, but representation matters so much. So people who are listening to this, any part of Emily that you see and you hear, like it is showing you that you can do so much and you can do it too. So thank you so much. And I know you have a busy day ahead of you, so I don't want to keep you too much longer, but before we go, I've got two last things. And so this has come to me recently. I actually really want to know this, especially for someone like you, who's doing all the things that you are, but what would your walkout song be?
Carrie Underwood, Champion.
Ooh, that's
good. I've been known to like drive up places with that, blasting my windows down. It's such a pump up anthem for me. And I do. So, okay, go ahead, ask your next question. Cause I got the answer. I was about to say it. Go ahead. Okay.
So my next question is just, you know, you spent time with us here today and you've gifted so much to our audience and to me. And so if people are going to remember, take away one or two things, from your episode of this, what would it be?
So what you were saying so generously and kindly about me and my career, I want to just identify for everybody when the shift for me happened. So a lot of us grow up as athletes, and as an athlete, you're competitive, and competitive is an amazing skill. It's an amazing attitude to have in your career to help you stay focused on, you know, earning the next role, earning the next dollar, performing for your company. So I fully believe in competition. But a huge shift for me happened when I stopped competing with other women and I started cheering for them. Mm. I would look at the women around me and I'd get this pit in my stomach of like, oh, like she did that and I'm still here. And I would feel like sad for myself instead of celebrating her success. And when I made that decision, Amy Poehler has this great quote, good for her, not for me. Uh-huh. And it really shifts that to think like, yes, good for her. Like that's her celebration, not mine. And when my time comes, won't it be great when I have the support of the people around me who are cheering for me and my success? And I realized that I should be cheering for other women and their success. That's a lot of like where the podcast was born and like the growth I've experienced from interviewing these women and genuinely feeling like so happy for them and what they've accomplished and what they're so generously sharing with the audience and the next generation to like help their career grow. And what it did for me, which was like an unintended consequence, I didn't know this was going to happen. It created a group of amazing women around me who, like Shauna did today, like I feel like I want to cry just in gratitude for you being so genuinely happy for me and like doing the TED talk. And that doesn't happen. Like it's not reciprocated unless that's what you're giving.
Yeah.
And it's this great way to create a network of people that you can support and cheer for. And it's another mindset shift, like to go from, you know, going after that role and pushing everybody out of the way to make sure you get there, to like thinking about the people around you and supporting their careers. And maybe you find an opportunity that's not right for you, so you share it with one of them and they get to do it. And that reward and that feeling of like, man, my group, my people, like we're all succeeding together.
Yeah.
So that's what I would like people to take away, is just in my, you know, candor and vulnerability to share, like I was not always like that. And that's part of of what has helped me grow into a leader and someone who genuinely I care about the women and men in my circle. And like, I'm so happy for them when they do well. And, you know, think about that for yourself and like what little mindset shifts can you make to help yourself grow and evolve?
Yeah. Wow. Well, that is amazing. And a leader you surely are. I am so grateful to count you in my circle and call you a friend. And just thank you so much for all you're doing and for sharing your voice with us here today. So I will let you go. Have an amazing day and we'll talk soon.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And thank you for creating this platform. I've been listening lately and the episodes are not only good, not only great, but important conversations that you're having. So thank you.
Thank you so much.